library like she told her old man now. And with the radio blasting, goes cruising just as fast as she can now. And she'll have fun, fun, fun till her daddy takes a T-bird away.
Fun, fun, fun till her daddy takes a T-bird away.
Well, the girls can't stand her cause she walks, looks and drives like an ace.
You walk like an ace now, you walk like an ace.
She makes the Indy 500 look like a Roman chariot face.
You look like an ace now, you look like an ace.
A lot of guys try to catch her but
Good morning, Medford. That was Obla Di Blada by the Beatles. So, how you doing, Rachel?
I'm good, Molly. Only up at this time for you.
Oh, man. Glad to hear it. So, I'm going to introduce our guests. But first, it is 6:06 a.m., and you are listening to WMFO in Medford. So, with me on the show this morning, we have a very special guest, Rachel Klein. And Rachel and I go way back. We have a lot of points of interest that we have in common. And so we are both part of the Frisbee program, and we met in the Hodgdon dorm last year. We live in the same dorm, and we live in the same dorm this year, and we're living together next year. And we both taught at the Medford Synagogue last semester.
It's a wild world.
It is a wild world.
I've actually been on the show before.
You have?
I called in.
Oh, you're right. So last semester, when we did a special nighttime show of Chatting with Molly, Rachel was in California, and she called all the way into the station.
True story.
How wonderful. And did you like your experience then?
I did. It was weird because I was listening to myself on the radio at the same time. There's a little feedback, and I'm not sure how I felt about my voice, but...
Yeah. That's tough to hear it right when you're talking.
Yeah.
So, how does it feel to be back? How's your semester going? Any thoughts or New Year's resolutions you want to share?
Semester's been good. Been sick almost the whole time.
Oh, no.
That's, you know, it's a thing.
Yeah. I remember last year, I only got sick once, but... we have a friend, Claire, and she would get sick like every weekend, and it was just new bugs, I guess, living in dorms. It's so easy to catch stuff.
Yeah, but I created a nifty new hashtag first day fever.
Ooh.
I did have a first day of school fever.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really tough.
So maybe I'll catch on now.
Maybe. Oh, man. So.
Yeah, I've resolved I want to run 4 miles.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That is such a good, like, hard thing to put in stone that, like, is easily achievable, but, you know, still single.
Yeah, so I haven't really started because I've been sick, but that hopefully will happen.
That's awesome. So is that, like, a 4 miles just once, or, like, you want to make it into your routine?
Yeah, I want to, like, be able to consistently run 4 miles.
Gotcha.
Cool. I think since I play Frisbee, being able to run a longer distance is probably a positive.
Yes, I would agree.
Change in my life.
I would agree. Except it's funny because last year we did this like training with this ultimate athletic coach type of thing. And he was saying that, which is actually something I really disagree with, distance training will directly hurt your like short distance speed. And I really believe in the value of like cross training and doing exercises that aren't your primary sport to help.
Yeah, I think so. And like with Frisbee, especially since I'm on the B team, like there's some points that are just 30 minutes.
Oh no.
And I would be dying during the tournaments and I
It's true.
Maybe that'll help out. Also, I'm really not too fast short distance, so I don't think it'll be too much of an issue.
Yeah, it's... but I was thinking about long distance, and growing up, I would never like... running. I like really hated running when I was little. I always like played different sports, and that's like how I got my exercise. But then my senior year in high school, I like started running, and I ran because I was like training for this marathon that I was doing through charity. And I realized that if you just like slow down, you can really enjoy running a lot more. You know, like if you go at a really slow pace, then those mileages are just like so much more achievable. You know, have you ever like been running? Have you ever gone in a run that you've like really enjoyed or? Yeah.
And I don't know. I, like, in a sophomore year of high school, they made us run 3 miles over the course of the semester. And, like, when I actually did it, I felt like it was a good run.
Yeah.
But I haven't. I've never gotten, like, euphoria from running.
Right. Or something like it's that. Funny that it's hard. Like, when I first asked you that question, you, like, kind of grimaced, and it's so common that, like, no one enjoys running, even though when you're not doing it for competition, it should be enjoyable, mm-hmm. you know? And sometimes when I go on personal runs, I will, like, push myself to go fast and make it unenjoyable, but there's no reason I need to do that. I should just, like, run at whatever pace I want, and yeah. then it'll be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kate Lamberti. Do you know Kate Lamberti?
No.
She's a civil engineer. Pretty great gal. She's actually doing FitFu this year. And so she really is a huge proponent. She just, like, loves to run and will just, like, walk out the door and go on a run, like, no music, no mileage tracking, no timer. Just, like, I'm just going to run. And whenever I get tired, I'm going to stop and walk and come back.
Wow.
And I feel like I should do that more.
That sounds amazing.
You know, like, yeah. Every time I run, I try to, like, get my app and make sure I'm tracking my mileage and my speed. But, like, there's no reason I need to be so, like, meticulous.
Yeah.
So, takes the fun out of it.
Yeah, I feel like that's, like, a certain type of spirit.
Yeah. Yes, Kate does have a certain type of spirit. Well, what other type of exercise do you enjoy? I've been thinking a lot about, like, later in life, what exercise I want to be part of my life. And I think tennis is a big part of my life.
I like tennis. I took a tennis class last semester.
Incredible.
Actually,
yeah. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, it was quite an experience. The tennis coach who was in charge of our class didn't really care if we were learning the skills or coming to class, so it was pretty chill.
That is chill.
Yeah, I went, a bunch of seniors, because who else has time to take a tennis class? I guess me.
Yeah.
Got a little better, definitely. Could
That's
do some
great.
Rallies by the end.
Yeah.
I took my dad out over break, and honestly, he beat me, so I was embarrassing since he hadn't played in years.
That's right.
He's got a big serve.
Yeah, that doesn't go away.
No.
Yeah,
my serve is mostly accurate, but slight.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but I really love Zumba.
I also like Zumba. Where have you experienced Zumba, and what do you like about it?
Yeah, mostly at my home gym that I was a part of in high school. It's, like, right in the heart of Oakland.
Nice.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, one of the most diverse spaces other than male people.
Wow.
That I've ever been in. Like, all ages, all ethnicities, all races. It was so cool.
That's awesome.
And it's just, like, an hour and 20 straight of basically just cardio. But
wow.
You don't realize
an hour 20?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
You get a little tired,
yeah.
A lot sweaty, but it's really fun.
That's awesome. So who leads it? Is it, like, students that are, like, young and leading it? Or are these, like, experienced Zumba masters?
You have to, like, be certified to teach Zumba.
Yeah.
My teacher, she was, I don't know, probably in her late 20s, early 30s. I think she was, like, a gym instructor for her profession.
Interesting.
Yeah.
At my summer camp, about, I would say 6 years ago, we started offering Zumba.
Mm.
And it's always these, like, couple girls who have been doing it who are, like, really into Zumba in their, like, prospective colleges and are certified and, like, all this stuff. And I have to say, it has, like, revolutionized camp. It is just, so it's the best activity to get tons of people just involved and, like, active. Whenever there's a storm warning or, like, a power outage, or we have to all be, I guess not a power outage because then there wouldn't be music, but so many times we're just, like, stuck in the, what we call the Chadar Ochel, the dining hall, and we just have to, like, keep 500 kids entertained, and our Zumba leaders just get up there and like do their thing, and just everyone is like reluctant at first. It's like, oh, like I'm not into Zumba, like I don't want to do it, and it's like starships are, and it's just like going, and everyone is so into it.
It's so fun.
It's really fun. And you're right that, like, you don't realize you're getting a workout.
Yeah.
You know, until you're 40 minutes in and you're like, oh, man, I'm kind of out of breath.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Definitely. I've been sore. Like, my teacher puts a lot of squats in there.
Yeah. To really enhance the workout.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, do you have any song requests or good music you like? If not,
Putting me on the spot.
That's right. You can think about it for a little bit.
Okay.
And for now, we will play a little bit of Billy Joel.
I do. I'm so inspired by you that to stay with me. You couldn't stand to be near me when my face don't seem to want to shine, 'cause it's a little bit dirty. Oh well, don't you stand there saying nice things to me, 'cause I've been cheated, I've been wrong.
And that was Push by Matchbox 20. And that song came from our lovely guest, Rachel. She requested it.
I'm a big fan of the 90s.
Yeah, big fan. So it is 6:24 a.m. and you are listening to WMFO in Medform, Tufts Freeform Radio. So we are back with our guest, Rachel Klein. So Rachel, what's your major or majors?
Well, Molly, I'm actually a double major in environmental studies and religion.
Ooh. So how do you see those two pairing, or at least pairing in your life or your profession? And what do you like about each of them?
Yeah, I guess coming into college, I kind of knew I was going to major in those, even if I didn't. They were always the two subjects I was most interested in.
Gotcha.
I guess in my personal life, like, I'm spiritually Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been interested in, like, Bible stories and then finding out about other religions.
Yeah.
And, like, the cause I most, I don't know, most often rally around, in at least the, like, the speaking sense, not always the, I guess, action-taking sense, is the environment.
Yeah.
I think I could do better in, like, taking sustainability into my life more, or, like, I don't know, joining clubs on campus that have to do with sustainability.
Yeah.
But I think that the environment is, or should be, the most obvious problem of our generation.
Yeah. I totally agree.
And I think it encompasses so much more than what the environment has been relegated to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when people think about environment and religion, they don't think they go together, but religion is part of our society, which is part of our environment.
Yeah.
And the action, or the ideological stances that we take within our religions, can influence how we act as people. And that can influence, like, how we treat our environment.
Yeah. That's awesome. I've never really thought about that. I was thinking more, kind of, I guess, on, like, policy, how religion and environment can go together. But that's so true that our religion is such a huge factor in our actions, which always directly impact the environment.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. So what kind of class, have you had any classes that have been able to touch on both, or is it pretty separate so far?
They're pretty separate. Every time I talk to the like religion department head, he's like, oh, I wish we had a class on the religion and the environment. Yeah. Me too. He says it every time. See yeah. But I did take anthropology of the environment, which I guess is the closest it's gotten just in looking at like different cultures and how they relate to the environment. There hasn't been anything too close, but I actually worked at an organization last summer, Interfaith Power and Light, and they're a religious response to climate change, and they used
that sounds just about exactly what fits your interest.
I know, it was pretty wild. I probably should work there when I'm older. But they use a lot of like spiritual passages from like various religious texts because they're an interfaith organization to like motivate people to change. So like the Pope's encyclical, or like there's various passages in, I don't know, all sorts of religious texts about like how humans are related to the environment or your like duty to care for it. Like the, I don't know, we're both Jewish in the Old Testament. This was actually my bat mitzvah portion. I remember. They talk about like having a jubilee year for the fields and like
every 10 years, right?
I think it's every 7.
Okay.
You're supposed to like let the field lie bare and like let everything grow.
Yes.
And like everyone can just come and pick up the fruit that's on the ground, but not like that's growing.
Right.
And it's like a rest for the earth. So kind of that concept is in a lot of different
And I stuff. Think that actually comes up a lot in Israel, because Israel has such, for those listeners we have that aren't familiar with Israel's economy, agriculture is actually such a big part of Israel's economy, and especially with grapes and wine and things that you're maybe not eating right when it's harvested, that those jubilee years are actually a really big deal, because people who are more religious and follow the Torah won't eat things from that year.
Yeah.
So there are certain like years of wine which religious people won't drink.
Interesting.
And that were like created in, or like made in Israel. And I think the rules only apply to Israel. So you can drink like that wine that was made in France in that year, but not in the fields of like the Holy Land, I believe.
I've never heard that. Yeah. That's interesting.
And the Jubilee year, I think, is like a point in the Torah that's just like so wise, you know, because you're supposed, like the whole idea of like crop rotation and leaving your crops to kind of like sink back into the ground and refurbish the nutrients is such a important part of agriculture, and it's really awesome that the Torah like highlights that and appreciates
that. And it's like something we don't do anymore,
right?
Like we never give our fields rest,
exactly,
or switch up our crops,
right? And now we are ruining our nutrients.
Look at our soil erosion,
exactly. And in Iowa, so the idea of like topsoil is kind of a gauge for how fertile the land is. And in Iowa, it was said that when explorers first were coming over the land, they found that there was about 2 feet of topsoil, which is really crazy, like a full 24 inches. And everywhere else, there were maybe like a few inches of topsoil, like really, really nutrient dense soil. And that's why Iowa is such good farmland.
Uh-huh.
But now we have 4 inches of topsoil left. God. And in like 1800s, there were 24 inches.
Yeah.
That took like millions of years to develop, you know?
Yeah.
And that is so sad, because that is how, like you said, soil erosion happens, and that's how dust bowls happen, and that's how wild, you know, just like general dryness. And that is so sad that our wonderful, like, Iowa pride in agriculture could be going away.
It's true. Don't you guys have a lot of problems with, like, fertilizer runoff?
Yes, exactly. So part of the reason why topsoil is going away is because our farming practices have drastically changed in the last 100 years. All the family farms are getting eaten up by big agribusiness, and they use just like huge amounts of pesticides. And what actually happens is GMOs, I actually don't think are inherently bad or unhealthy. I think the way in which we use GMOs are like really toxic for our land. And basically what happens is certain plants, you can pull up, let's say, I'm just going to use like abstract units, like 5 units of nutrients, and you can grow 5 units of plant. But the, and that's inherent in the capability of the plant. But we've GMO'd these plants so that they can pull up 20 units of nutrients, mm-hmm. so that they're growing 20 units of plant. And it's like, we look at that and say, wow, look how incredible our plants are. They can grow so much. But that nutrient concentration has to come from somewhere. So we pack our soil with synthetic nitrogen, which is one of the leading limiting factors in nutrients for yeah. plants. And then they pull up this nitrogen and it's synthetically made, which has its own harms. But then they're also pulling up all the secondary nutrients that we don't supplement also. So they're just pulling up tons and tons of nutrients, and that's what's getting rid of our topsoil. So then we have to put extra fertilizers on there and supplements, and it's just a vicious cycle, you know?
I agree.
Such a shame. When I was in Thailand, I learned so much about organic farming, and I really, that's when my dream to be a farmer was really born. I had to leave Iowa in order to realize I wanted to be a farmer. but the it's tough because the transition to make a farm from non-organic to organic could take 4 or 5 years, and those 4 or 5 years are going to be pretty low output. And so a farmer that makes their livelihood mm-hmm. on selling their crops is not going to be able to just sacrifice 4 or 5 years of crops. Yeah. But the hope is that when people go organic, it's often you have more output mm-hmm. because you're using the land more efficiently, and there are like nuanced ways to make crop output higher. And that's actually like a misnomer that that organic farms turn out less. It's really the big cost in organic is the transition, really.
Huh.
Yeah. So look, the more you know about farming.
Learning things before 7 a.m.
Exactly.
What a day.
I know. The good thing about getting up so early is really anything you accomplish, it's like a pat on the back.
It's true.
You know?
I never get up this early.
Exactly. Like anything we have done in the last 40 minutes, it's like, all right, if I weren't up, I'd just be sleeping. So, you know, good for me getting all the way to the station and talking about religion.
True.
Oh, man. So, speaking of religion, would you care to share a little bit about your religious upbringing? And you were saying ever since you were young, that's kind of been your interest. And just talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. My family is... my dad is Jewish, and mm-hmm. my mom was born Catholic. She doesn't practice anymore. So that mm-hmm. makes me not a Jew in everyone's eyes, but that's another topic for discussion.
Yeah.
And my parents agreed when we were born, or maybe before, I think, that they were going to raise us Jewish. I think that my dad had some guilt somehow mm-hmm. for the Holocaust and wanting to raise more Jewish children, even gotcha. Though he doesn't feel very Jewish himself.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. One condition, my mom wanted to have Christmas, which we really haven't been doing lately. Sorry. but yeah, we got enrolled, me and my sister got enrolled in Hebrew school when we started kindergarten, and I went through all the levels. Got bat mitzvahed at 7th grade, and then my temple had a youth group that I did through 12th grade, got confirmed. And I liked Hebrew school.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ever really excited about it, so I'm not sure exactly where my interest in interest in religion came from there. Mm-hmm. I never really loved learning Hebrew, although I take Hebrew now.
Yeah.
But I think it really came from sleepaway camp. Started going in the summer before fifth grade. I went for like 8 years.
Nice. Is your sleepaway camp affiliated with a certain movement or a certain synagogue?
Yeah, it's Reform.
Oh, okay,
URJ
cool.
Camp.
Nice.
It's like their most profitable camp. Fun
That's
fact.
Amazing.
I went to the most profitable URJ camp, not on purpose. Yeah. It actually burnt down in the recent Tubbs fires.
Ugh, that's so sad.
But it's nice they've been like, everyone's rallied together. I think they're going to rebuild.
That's awesome.
I have my own qualms about that, just in it being in the same place where it could happen again.
Yeah.
But they're having camp this summer at a different location, which is great. But yeah, camp just really was like a positive place that also happened to be Jewish.
Yeah.
I think, and that was like the thing that made me love it in the beginning, was that it like was mostly fun.
Right.
And then we also did Jewish stuff.
Right.
And all my friends were Jewish. So that kind of just gets you into it.
Yeah.
And I think they really did a good job correlating Judaism to social justice, which is something like I've
always cool.
really cared about, I think, like inherently. And so it kind of mixed my passions, and like now yeah. I can see them as like possibly being one thing.
Yeah.
Whereas like I know they can also be separate or opposing. And so yeah,
very
it's
cool.
been an interesting
yeah.
journey.
I had a similar experience with camp. I think that that's really, I think, the perfect model of first, it's fun and an amazing time, mm-hmm. and then it introduces kids to Judaism in ways that they've probably never experienced before.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I am just really impressed with the, like, American Jewish movement of how they've perfected summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so many kids go to these summer camps that just are huge parts of their lives and shape them as human beings. And frankly, like, a lot of my non-Jewish friends just do not have these communities in their
yeah,
life.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's so sad.
Yeah, it's something like I spent New Year's with my camp friends.
Right.
And, like, we get together every year, and it's, like, a
yeah.
really positive... I have really positive memories from it, and
yeah.
I, like, still continue to, like, have positive connections.
Yeah. I think it's just, like, yeah, similarly, I have a very strong group that I still really love and are huge parts of my life. I went all the way to, like, University of Wisconsin just to visit some camp friends, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something so special that I'm so glad I had.
Yeah.
And I really thank my parents for that, because they both grew up going to summer camp. My mom got shipped off to summer camp so young. She was in like first or second grade
yeah.
and going for 8 weeks.
My dad went for 8 weeks at like age six.
Yeah. They just did that back
like,
then.
What?
They just
Don't
shipped
you miss
him
your
off.
Child?
And so, it's so lovely to hear them talk about their camp experience mm-hmm. And reminisce like this many years later, because I know I'm going to be that parent yapping to my kids about
yeah.
How much I love summer camp.
Yeah, I know. And it really, like, I don't know, shapes you to be an adult.
Yeah.
Which is
I totally
great.
Agree. I think about, it's kind of a shame, because I think about the skills I learn at camp, and really all of the skills that I, like, hold near and dear to my heart, I can attribute to camp. And it's sad that professionally, especially like development wise, a lot of employers don't see it really beneficial
mm-hmm.
to have camp experience. It's not really like a, ooh, you are a camp counselor, like that's a great, you know, because it's so common. But I have to say that it is the best experience I've ever had.
Yeah, I agree.
Like the most meaningful, the most noteworthy. I just think that I learned public speaking skills, I learned improv skills, I learned support skills and interpersonal, and I really can't speak highly enough. If I was a recruiter for any job, mm-hmm. really like any field, I think I would look for someone who was a camp counselor. Maybe that's just because I've been recently filling out applications and taking a look at my resume.
Sending
but,
it out there to the waves.
Right, exactly. But
yeah.
It's really a great thing.
It's true.
Yeah. So we're getting to our second part of our show. And let's talk about music a little bit. So what music has been kind of a part of your life growing up?
The earliest, like, things I remember, like, my parents playing were, like, different. I remember listening to a lot of The Carpenters and Sheryl Crow.
Interesting.
With my mom.
Interesting.
And my dad has a very unique taste in music. He has, like, 10,000 songs at least on his iPod.
Whoa.
He listens to a lot of jazz, a lot of bluegrass. He's recently come into Americana.
Ooh.
I have like a love of the Beatles from him.
Yeah.
So I feel like I got introduced to a lot of different stuff, which is kind of informed why I can't really say like what my favorite type of music is.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of random stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, music has always been a really big part of my life. My parents started having house concerts.
What?
With like individual musicians when I was like, I don't know, sixth grade.
That is so cool. I never heard that.
Yeah, we would. So it's like no one very big. A couple Grammy nominated artists came
what?
To our house. But probably twice a year. So my mom is actually an event planner.
Mm-hmm.
It's her second career.
What was her first career?
She was a lawyer.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
But they started having house concerts twice a year, put on a big party for like 60 of their friends. The musician like stands in the front of our living room and like I would make like a star sign for like our guest room so they could
wow.
like put their stuff in there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And there'd be food and like everyone would just sit in chairs and like listen to these musicians. And like when I got into high school, they started letting me help at the parties.
Cool.
I would like, I don't know, serve food or clean up after. It was really awesome. And just that's
so
like
awesome.
A pretty unique experience.
Yeah.
So like getting to meet all these traveling musicians trying to make it has
wow.
been really cool.
Yeah.
And just like having private concerts.
Yeah. That's such a unique like idea to host a party for,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think as adults, it's so awesome that people are so creative with getting together, you know, because that's fun, just like you and your friends doing that. You said twice a year, got it.
Yeah.
But that's like so awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's actually was, I don't know, I guess in like around 2010,
yeah.
Like an up and coming idea to do, because these musicians, like, you get paid. Often you get to stay at their house.
Yeah.
The house is like nicer than any dive bar you're going to,
right.
and they give you food, and like
right.
everyone's really nice.
Yeah.
So they want to do these house concerts.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah.
So. It's a sweet deal for them. It's a cool experience for you.
Yeah.
Wow. So your mom is an event planner.
She is.
How did she make that transition from being a lawyer?
Once she had me and my sister, she was not working full time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like neither of my parents really love like being lawyers.
Yeah.
You'll hear that from a lot of lawyers.
Yeah.
My dad always told me that I couldn't be a lawyer. I don't think he actually like if I wanted to be a lawyer. I could, but
yeah.
whenever I tell him one of my friends is like thinking about going to law school, he's like, oh God, you should have me talk to them.
It's so funny you say that because I literally have the exact same experience.
With your parents?
My dad is a lawyer
yeah.
and he grew up telling us that it's not as glamorous as you think it is. Like, I've told him multiple times that I've wanted to go to law school, and he's completely talked me out of it.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's funny because all of my friends in every stage of my life have always said, like, Molly, you're so argumentative. Like,
you should
go to law
lawyer.
School,
yeah.
you know? And I've just, like, that's never been on the table.
No, me
and
either.
It's so funny because it's the opposite of other parents in professions.
Yeah.
I feel like all my friends' parents who are doctors, they're all looking to go to med school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's so funny
know,
that
really
with law, it's different.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I would have a better time in it than my parents because they're both in employment law and it's really not that fascinating.
Yeah.
You deal with like a lot of corrupt people.
Yeah.
I'd probably want to go into like environmental law or,
yeah,
I don't know, public defender or something. But
that'd be cool.
Those are really hard jobs.
Yeah.
So I probably
like really, really long hours and sometimes really not a lot of like pay money wise or sometimes with environmental justice. Like I toured the NRDC, the National Resource Defense Council, and they are kind of twofold. They're a lot of policy, so they do a lot of consulting on with politicians and trying to get legislation done and lobbying, but then also they have a huge kind of like law division where they're just going after huge companies. And it was honestly like kind of sad hearing about their daily life. They're just taking on these massive, massive oil companies and companies that are ruining the environment that just have so many resources.
Yeah.
And then NRDC just doesn't have as many resources.
Yeah. No.
And it's really sad.
It is. I think it's pretty depressing to be an environmental lawyer or really in the environmental sector.
Yeah.
But yeah, my mom, she, since my parents had started having these parties, had like kind of taken it on as her thing, and everyone was always telling her how good she was at them.
That's so awesome.
She became a party planner. She does a lot of bar and bat mitzvahs.
Yeah, I bet. That is so cool. I feel like that is something that is just so valuable to be able to look at your own life and be like, okay, I'm not enjoying what I do now. Here's something I would enjoy. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's really cool.
Wow. I have two cousins who actually started a social media business 4 years ago, like a consultant group. But before, one of them was doing advertising and one of them was doing event planning. Mm-hmm. And it was just so interesting hearing about her job because it is so dynamic.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm really like looking for in a career, something that is always changing and challenging you. And event planning is just so hard because there are so many factors happening all the time.
Yeah.
I know you were telling me before that you worked a little bit with her over break.
Yeah.
Have you ever helped her kind of like run the actual events or is it mostly like prep work?
Yeah, she mostly does prep work, like, during the actual event. It's, like, really up to the caterers to, like, get the food done. And, like, she hires the DJ and stuff like that.
Makes
but,
sense.
In high school, I used to help her set up for all sorts of parties. And it's, like, it's insane. You've got to get ready in this short time frame, make sure everything looks good. And then things don't arrive and you got to improvise. And, like, things don't look like they really thought you... or you thought they were going to look like, so you got to change it up, and then you have to deal with the family, and everyone
comes
in, and you got to have really good people skills, which sometimes I give my mom a hard time about, because she can get, like, a little judgy, but she's actually, she's really great, and she deals really with all the, like, bat mitzvah moms who are just freaking out.
I was just thinking, like, man, the client work must be a really difficult thing to manage, because...
Yeah, for sure.
That's just like who you're dealing with, and they probably have an idea in their own mind and they're kind of planning alongside you, and so that's really tough.
She like actually doesn't do weddings because she doesn't want to deal with brides.
Wow. That's interesting that's like a conscious choice.
Yeah.
So what other events, like bar mitzvahs and what were you saying?
She does she's put on some house concerts for other people.
Cool.
Yeah. She does some, she's trying to get more into like corporate events, and like, I don't know, big birthday parties for like adults, like turning 50 or 60 or something
Nice.
Like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Holiday parties.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Proud
of her. Started her own business.
Yeah.
Cool lady.
What's it called?
Rosecrest Special Events.
Rosecrest. Where does that name come from?
It comes from like an area where I live.
Oh, nice. Wow, I just heard in the headset that, I heard in the headset that the microphone was picking up the street traffic, which is kind of an unfortunate thing. And I'm wondering, like, how other, like, professional radios deal with that. Maybe they have, like, a soundproof studio.
Yeah,
where
probably.
Things don't come in. That would make more sense.
Getting late outside, more traffic now.
Yeah, it is. It's so nice in the morning, you know, when the sun
first... The sky's a cool color.
Yeah. What's your favorite kind of... let's see how I should phrase this. Your favorite transition in the sky, or like state, the state in which the sky is. Mm. Like, describe your favorite sky, I would say.
Interesting. Well, I think I'm most like at awe during sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Just with like, I don't know, the variety of the colors the sky can take.
Yeah.
But I think... my favorite sky is just like a classic blue sky with clouds.
Yeah.
It just makes me feel happy.
Yeah. I love, one of my favorite activities is just cloud watching.
Yeah.
I think it is so fun to kind of watch them roll past and like take on different shapes. It's just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Man. So we are going to listen to a little PSA on the dangers of heroin. Well, I'm not sure if the PSA is working quite yet, so I'm actually going to read a PSA from our handy dandy book. For those of you who don't know and are familiar with the FAA rules, a freeform radio, or I actually don't know if it's freeform or just any or student, has to say a PSA every hour. So this one is about public transit versus walking. If you take public transportation, good for you. You're helping to save the environment and money too. But if you aren't getting all the exercise you should be, you might want to consider walking directly to your destination instead of using public transit. Depending upon the distance, once you factor in the time it takes to make your way to the T-stop, wait, and then get to your final destination from the station, walking the whole trip can often be faster. And even when it isn't, you're getting good exercise and saving even more money. For example, if it takes 45 minutes to walk where you want to go instead of 30 minutes using the T, you'll get 3/4 of an hour of exercise and fresh air for just an extra 15 minutes of your time, and that's a real healthy deal. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. So, thank you to the PSA book for letting us know the value in walking. I guess it's because we're an educational radio that we have to do this.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting tidbit. There are some really funny ones in there. There's a couple about the dangers of like ladders, which I would have read if I could find, but
yeah, I think people die from ladders every year.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Because you think of kind of those household objects as really common things that sure to have kind of safety regulations that protect the public, but I guess there are always ways to be clumsy and hurt yourself on things. So
you need a consumer protection agency, like isn't that Ralph Nader's thing?
I'm not sure, but
pretty sure.
It's true that consumer protection agencies are pretty important. So it is nearing our time to sign off. I'm going to play a couple final songs. This is Call Off Your Dogs by Lake Street Dive. I love Lake Street Dive. I actually play a ton of Lake Street Dive.
My parents also love Lake Street
Really?
Dive. Yeah.
They're really such a fun band.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank Rachel for coming on the show with us today, waking up at a early 5:40 in the morning and knocking on my door to wake me up this morning. Much appreciated.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Molly.
And with that, here is Call Off Your Dogs.